ദി ടെംപെസ്റ്റ് ആൻ ഇൻട്രൊഡക്ഷൻ ടു ദ പ്ലേ. ഷേക്സ്പിയർസ് ലാസ്റ്റ് കംപ്ലീറ്റ് പ്ലേ, റിട്ടൻ ലേറ്റ് ഇൻ 1610. ദി ടെംപെസ്റ്റ് ഈസ് ബിലീവ്ഡ് ടു ഹാവ് ബീൻ റിട്ടൻ ബൈ ഷേക്സ്പിയർ ലേറ്റ് ഇൻ ദ ഇയർ 1610 ആൻഡ് ഈസ് റിഗാർഡഡ് ഷേക്സ്പിയർസ് ലാസ്റ്റ് കംപ്ലീറ്റ് പ്ലേ. ദസ് ദിസ് പ്ലേ മേ ബി കോൾഡ് ഷേക്സ്പിയർസ് സ്വാൻ സോങ്. At one time it was thought that the Tempest was one of the Shakespeare's earliest works, but subsequently critics found enough evidence for the view that Cymbeline, The Winter's Tale, The Tempest and the Shakespearean parts of Pericles were all written towards the end of Shakespeare's professional career over a period of about 3 years. These plays have no more in common than any other group of his plays have. The Tempest is the last of these and probably the finest of the four. All these plays have been grouped together under the label of romances, and they are plays which could only have been written at the end of Shakespeare's character. A critic in this connection says, after the storm and violence of tragedies, the despair of King Lear, the disillusion of Timon of Athens, comes this group of pastoral romances, which appear in this context like a vision of hope sprung from the inner turmoil. The world of this place is not without evil, the murderous hate of Dionysia for Mariana, the bitter misogyny of Posthumus, Leontes, jealous rage, and the drunkenness, lost, and treachery we see in the Tempest. But evil never triumphs over goodness. In fact, vitality overcomes spiritual desolation, and life conquers death in so many instances that it is tempting to interpret the romances as versions of a myth of resurrection. Of course, these plays differ in particular details and in emphasis, but they all possess the typical features of the romantic mood. Those features are themes of loss and features of the romance mood. These features are themes of loss and recovery, exile and return. Second, the long journeys often by sea and often interrupted by storms and shipwreck. Three, situations characterized by qualities of the unlikely, the improbable, the mysterious and miraculous. And four, distant, exotic locations and Arcadian golden age countryside. It may also be noted in this context that the improbabilities in the plots of this place stem not from a failure of Shakespeare's art, but from his sense of what is appropriate to the fairy tale atmosphere of the stories. Realism and verisimilitude give place in this place to a different kind of truth, which finds expression in symbolic terms. Besides music and song from an important part of all these plays, though they are most prominent in The Tempest, magic and the supernatural also play an important role in all these plays. The controversy about the date of the composition of The Tempest. Certain other features of The Tempest also link it with the plays written by Shakespeare during the last period, 1608 to 1613. Of his dramatic career, In the plays of his last period, Cymbeline, The Winter's Tale, Pericles and The Tempest, the wealth of ideas tends to outgrow his capacity for expression, resulting in a style which is highly elliptical and which ignores the canons of syntax observed in the earlier plays. The almost complete absence of rhyme in The Tempest also links it to the plays of Shakespeare's last period of dramatic activity. The evidence of meter, style and atmosphere makes it almost certain
that the Tempest was not written earlier than 1608. One scholar has suggested that this play was written in 1613. The basis of his theory is that Ben Jonson's made a couple of references to the Tempest in the introduction of his play Bartholomew Fair, which was performed in 1614. Our scholar further supports the theory with the view that the Tempest was performed in 20th May 1613 in the presence of the Elector Palatine and the Princess Elizabeth, that the play was written in honor of their wedding at King James' behest. There is certainly some resemblance between the circumstances of the royal wedding and the events of this play, but if 1613 be accepted as the correct date of the composition of the Tempest, it would mean that this play was written 2 years after the Winter's Tale, which was performed at Globe Theatre in 1611. Now, the evidence of meter doesn't support the assumption that there was a gap of 2 years between these two plays. If judged by the evidence of meter and style, this play seem to have been written almost at the same time. The date of composition of the Winter's Tale was almost certainly in 1611, and this would seem to indicate that the Tempest too was written in that year. The date is supported by the suggestion that the Tempest was to some extent inspired by Sylvester Jordan's account of the wreck of Sir Jotham Sea at Sea Venture of the Bermudas. The wreck had occurred in 1609, and after the return of the shipwrecked had company to their country, Jordan, who was one of them, published his account in 1610. This means that the Tempest must have been written either late in 1610 or early in 1611. Of course, there is also some evidence to support the view that this play was written in 1613, but most critics have inclined to the theory that the play was written either early in 1911 or late in 1910. And the latter of these two dates has found greater support. In any case, there is no need for us to wrangle about the date of the composition of this or any other play of Shakespeare, because for us the play is the thing. Shakespeare's observances of the three unities in this play. Among Shakespeare's plays, The Tempest occupies a special position because of its observances of the well-known classical unities. Shakespeare was a romantic dramatist who did not follow the conventions of the ancient classical drama. Among the most important conventions of the ancient drama of the Greeks and the Romans was the observance of the three dramatic units. These units pertained to the time, place, and action. These dramatic unities, ancient Greek dramatic writers and their modern followers like Ben Jonson strictly observed the unities of time, place, and action. But the romantic dramatists like Shakespeare and other Elizabethan writers disregarded the unities as being unnecessary restrictions upon a writer. However, in The Tempest, Shakespeare did observe these three unities. There was no special reason for him to observe these three unities in this play, but perhaps he wanted to show that, although he was a romantic dramatist, he yet could follow the classical unities. In no other play did Shakespeare observe these unities. The unity of time demands that the action of play should not cover a longer period of time than its representation takes on the stage. In other words, the happenings in the play should not extend over a longer period of time than the performance of the play takes on the stage. However, this condition could be relaxed to some extent, so that the action of a play might cover a period of 24 hours, but not beyond that. Now, Shakespeare has strictly observed the unity of time in The Tempest. The events of this play take a little more than 3 hours, and a performance of this play on the stage would also take about the same time. In his other plays, Shakespeare pays absolutely no attention to the unity of time because the action in those plays covers a much longer period. Sometimes as long as 16 years, as in The Winter's Tale, the unity of place demands that the action of a play should occur at the same place without any change. In most other plays by Shakespeare, the scene keeps changing from one place to another. Sometimes the scene changes from one country to another, but in The Tempest, the entire action of the play takes place on a prosperous island. We are suddenly taken from one part of the island to another, even in the course of this play. But we are not made to leave the island together. Thus, the unity of place has been observed in this play to a very large extent. If this unity had been strictly and fully observed, the whole action of the play would have occurred at one and the same place, either outside Prospero's cell or in some other part of the island. The unity of action requires that a play should have a single plot. The unity of action doesn't allow the inclusion of any subplot or underplot. In most plays, Shakespeare, we find one main plot and two or more subplots or underplots. Even The Tempest, we have a couple of underplots, namely as conspiracies by Antonio and Sebastian against Alonso's life and of Caliban against Prospero's life. In addition to these two underplots, there is the love affair of Ferdinand and Miranda, which is even more important than the other two underplots. Yet, on the whole, The Tempest produces a unity of effect. The chief interest of this play lies in Prospero's exercise of his magic powers and in his bringing his enemies under his control by the exercise of those powers. The play is intended to focus our attention upon the injustices which Prospero had suffered at the hands of Antonio and Alonso, and the revenge which he takes upon his enemies, though this revenge consists in making them acutely conscious of their villainy and then forgiving them. Most of the incidents in the play are related to this theme, namely Prospero's exercise of his magic powers and his forgiveness of his enemies who had done a grave injustice to him. These main incidents in this play are a storm, the rescue by Ariel of Alonso's ship and of all the passengers aboard the ship, the magic banquet led by the strange shapes, and the disappearance of that banquet with the appearance on the scene of a harpy who is no other than Ariel in disguise. The falling in love of Ferdinand, Miranda and their betrothal, Prospero's confrontation with his enemies and his forgiveness of them after he has reprimanded them. Most of Prospero's magic actions are performed by Ariel on his behalf, and Prospero dominates the play to such an extent that his influence is felt by us even in those scenes where he is not personally present before us. Thus we may affirm that the unity of action in this play has been observed, though not as strictly and rigidly as it was observed in the ancient classical plays. Here we do have a couple of subplots which to some extent do violate the unity of action. These subplots in fact digressions and deviations from the main plot. Prospero's Island. Much has been written by critics about the exact location of Prospero's Island. Many of these critics have expressed the view that Shakespeare was here thinking of some particular island actually existing on the globe. According to them, Shakespeare had in mind some island in the Mediterranean Sea or in the Atlantic Ocean. One critic suggests that the scene of this play in the island of Bermuda, but this island is situated in the Atlantic Ocean, while early in the play we are told that after Alonso's ship has been wrecked close to Prospero's Island, it will scatter the rest of Alonso's fleet, which is then sailing safely upon the Mediterranean Sea in order to return to Naples. Thus we have a contradiction in this view, and it is not possible for us to believe that a ship in the course of a few hours has passed from the Atlantic Ocean to the Mediterranean Sea. According to another view, Prospero's Island in the play of Lampedusa, which lies midway between Malta and the African coast, and which is about as large as Prospero's Island seemed to be. Lampedusa is situated in a stormy sea. It is an uninhabited island, and it had at one time the reputation of being the abode of ghosts and spirits. According to yet another view, Shakespeare had in mind in the island of Corsica. Even the island of Malta has been suggested by some critics as the location of Prospero's Island. However, we cannot be certain about the island which Shakespeare had in the mind while writing his play. It is quite possible that he was influenced by the contemporary descriptions of Bermuda or some other island. It is possible that on the basis of these descriptions, Shakespeare invented an island which therefore existed only in his own imagination, most probably Prospero's island in Shakespeare's own creation, though Shakespeare must have relied on the description of actual islands which he had gone through the course of his wide reading. In any case, Prospero's island has a charm of its own. It is certainly a romantic island where romantic happenings take place. It's the kind of island where supernatural events are possible. The very remoteness of this island lends to it the right kind of atmosphere which the events of the story demand. It is only on such an island that Caliban, half monster and half man, could thrive. The adventurous spirit of the times conveyed through this play. In some respects, The Tempest reflects the spirit of the Elizabethan age. There are in this play echoes of the wonderful adventures of the Elizabethan seamen and of discoveries and plantations with which the expansion of England had been commenced. There are certain references in this play to the tales which travelers tell about the improbable happenings and imagined creatures which they profess to have witnessed in the course of their travels. These references remind the English readers of Raleigh's explorations of Guyana and Drake's journey around the world and Davy's voyages in search of the Northwest Passage. Indeed, The Tempest is full of all that excitement about the new discoveries of the time, and this play truly reflects the stirring aspects of the Elizabethan life. The very account by Prospero to Miranda of the manner in which he braved the dangers of the winds and the waves and eventually drifted to an island conveys the Elizabethan spirit of adventure. Prospero's safe arrival on the island symbolizes the discovery of new lands which had begun to take place in those days. The portrayal of Prospero, a self-portrait by Shakespeare. In considering The Tempest, we must also take into account the view that this play is autobiographical in inspiration. It has been suggested by many critics that the portrayal of Prospero in this play is a kind of self-portrait by Shakespeare. According to this view, Shakespeare was delineating his own character in his portrayal of the wayward Prospero. There is certainly some substance in this view. In Prospero's temper, we find grave harmony, self-control, sensitiveness to wrong, a desire for strict justice, and an aloofness from the common joys and sorrows of human life. Now, these were also the qualities of Shakespeare himself during the last period of his dramatic career. In addition to these qualities, Prospero's philosophic mood of reflection and his attitude of toleration and forgiveness seem to be Shakespeare's own mood and attitude during the final period of his professional life. And there is something even more significant in this play. Towards the close of the play, Prospero makes a long speech expressing his decision to renounce his magic and his supernatural powers. Prospero's decision to give up his supernatural powers may well be taken to mean Shakespeare's decision to stop writing dramas. It is generally agreed that The Tempest was Shakespeare's last complete play. The Tempest is believed to have been Shakespeare's swan song, that it is his last dramatic production. The speech in which Prospero declares his decision to abandon his magic may therefore be interpreted as Shakespeare's farewell to the theatre. Just as for many years Prospero governed his island with unlimited power, so Shakespeare held fully sway over the English theatre for many years. Just as Prospero, the great enchanter, decides to break his magic staff and throw his books of magic into the sea, so Shakespeare decided to leave the theatre and to retire to his native village of Stafford-on-Avon. In this connection, one other speech by Prospero is also significant. Speaking to his would-be son-in-law, Prospero says that the whole of this world, the entire behind, here is the use of the word globe, is noteworthy. Most of the Shakespeare's plays were enacted in the Globe Theatre. And so Shakespeare seems to be saying through the Prospero that the theatre where he had been presenting his plays is soon to fade away from his life. The Tempest then may be regarded as a play which to some extent projects Shakespeare himself and which conveys to us Shakespeare's mind and outlook of the time. When this play was written, a source this play assumes a special significance in the whole range of Shakespearean drama. This play marks in one respect the climax of Shakespeare's life as a dramatist.